Welcome to WMI Plus at Home podcast. I'm Gabby Sappington, the Executive Director of World Music Institute, and thank you for listening. WMI Plus at Home brings you into the personal environments of renowned artists from around the world as they share stories and music in an intimate conversation with a fellow musician, journalist, or ethnomusicologist. These talks were originally presented as live webinars, and you can watch video recordings of all our past at-home sessions on our website and YouTube channel. WMI Plus at Home is supported by a grant from Con Edison and world music lovers like you. We thank you and hope you enjoy the conversation.
My brother, David Broza, is here, and we have experienced much. David was born in Israel, and he lives now both in Israel and in the United States. And in order not to start a long time ago, but to go right to where we are now, David, my brother, what are you doing in your life right now that you think is a healing action for you and for the people that you affect? Why is it that I am asking you this question?
Peter, you know, just so that everybody knows, you and I, we've had a very, very close and invigorating relationship for the past 12 years or so. And my attraction to what you do, besides the beauty of your music and the history of your music and so many for so many years that I've known you, is one attraction. And the other is the way that you've really conducted your life in trying to lend yourself or actually lead away, whether it's in the United States, whether it's in other countries, and of course also in the Middle East, Israel and the West Bank or the Palestinian Authority. You've really, I've watched you and closely since I've known you. So you have kind of mentored me in many ways because you're way heads up ahead of me, not because of your age, because of the so many years more experience that you have. Now, if you ask me today, in the COVID times, and I have to place ourselves in the right moment where we live, no matter what the politics are outside, the COVID situation has affected all our lives and our ability to also be as effective as we would want to be in all the issues which are social issues. Now, in any other way than any way possible, I'm a musician. I'm an entertainer. I live for that. I am used to doing approximately about 200 shows a year, meaning that I travel across the globe. And of course, I also spend half my time in Tel Aviv. So every month I spend many days there. And COVID has actually brought me to an abrupt stop, as it has brought you and many and all our colleagues, musician friends, and has put us in a situation where we meet on Zoom and on Facebook and on YouTube, as I've watched you night after night, giving us your history through music, which has been just motivating and inspirational. So to tell you that I can effectively be part of a change that goes on today, I think it has been minimal because I'm used to being out there on the field. I'm a grassroots person. And of course, primarily in Israel. And that means that I spend much of my time, as I showed in my project 5 years ago called East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, which wasn't a project. Actually, it was an album, a beautiful album, which I brought Steve Earle, the great Steve Earle, to produce musically and also to be a middleman between me and whatever would happen in the studio as we were attracting Palestinian musicians and Israeli musicians under one roof and spent a heavenly 8 days and eight nights, almost like a Hanukkah miracle, of which is tonight is the first candle lighting. So we spent 8 days and eight nights under one roof. What I'm trying to say is that these sort of acts where I'm physically present make it possible to feel that you're contributing towards a change that will come sometime. And music is the first and foremost tool that I believe, which I have also full control of, a full use of, because I'm a musician, a singer-songwriter, or as they mentioned, a troubadour. It makes it very very effective for me to be physically around people, sing songs, make them sing along with me, play along, and create a harmonious environment and feeling. So COVID has really ruined and kind of put me at a stop where there's no way that I can overcome the situation and find new ways of advancing. However, it does enable us to search a little deeper and look for contacts around the world, because everybody is at a stop, as a standstill. So we can communicate through emails, through WhatsApps, through Zoom, through all these ways, and try to build something that would be more effective once the COVID has subsided and we go back to, you know, reliving our once upon a time busy, moving, traveling life, where we can actually mingle and mix around people. This is the short answer to your question.
No, I get it. My feeling is, David, that in a certain way, you're selling yourself short, because when I asked it because of the work that you are doing that we spoke about. And I feel that in this time when people are doing a reset mm-hmm. about what matters to them, for instance, the album that you made of instrumental music, and you were practicing to get your chops, as we mm-hmm. say. For those of you who don't know that, the chops are like your musical technique, able to play the complexity of these pieces of music that you wrote for the guitar. I put that out to my, you know, extended group of friends, and they are so moved by it. And I think that in non-COVID times, they would not have had the luxury of listening to it. For instance, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Noel, Paul, Stuckey, mm-hmm. he just flipped out, and so many other people. And I feel that this, in this time, is a huge contribution. It's so unbelievable. I don't even know if you... And there are other projects we want to talk about, but if you can just play a little bit of that for people, because really? I'm not telling you, in a certain way, for those of you that, you know, there are guitarists who have emerged over the past, you know, 20, 30 years who have redefined the limits of guitar playing in new ways, but David, in his particular style and particular way, has no peer. There are other people who play in other idioms, but I want to take a COVID break and embrace this. It's a spiritual thing to hear you do this, and just take your time and let us do a COVID moment of absorbing this extraordinary music. Yeah.
Thank you, Peter. So, I mean, of course, to get your incredible support and the love for this project warms my heart. And it's been so since I sent you my original first tapes of it. And I realized that there is an ear that would enjoy this. And you're right. It's possible that these times, the COVID times, actually pieces of music without words, because I'm a singer-songwriter, I normally have a lot of words, then I have a lot to say in my songs. And yeah. not to say one word and just play the story through a melody, that's a big deal. And it does give you, in COVID times, that ability to breathe and not constantly be fed by information, because really we are fed through internet and through all that. With information nonstop, suddenly there's music. So I see there's something personal about this and very intimate. You're right. So this is not necessarily about putting adversaries together and bridging over, you know, people, but it's about actually just spreading music regardless of who's listening to it, and people can listen and hear it. Let's see. This is called Guitar Confessions. Thank you. First movement.
Oh, I could have gone on for so long.
You want me to continue? Should I continue?
Yeah, please. It would be a joy to just share this for so long, and because we are reassessing what is important to us at this time. So many people have said, you know, it's reframed a sense of what is really meaningful to me in a terribly challenging time. You know, and this is to me a healing moment and a healing that you are providing, and I just think that it's turned a sow's ear into a silk purse in certain ways, for part of what COVID is, because it's. We're going inside in another way. I know you were talking about a project in terms of writing a vernacular liturgy.
That's true. Yeah, things are different. You know, I'm actually indulging in things that I'd never thought I would do ever in my life, and I'm having a great time at it. But to go back to the instrumental, you know, these past 9 months of COVID, I have been indoors. Nobody has to tell me to isolate myself because I have nowhere to go. I mean, I sit all day and I perform to myself. You know, I practice for a good 5-6 even more hours a day just to maintain the ability to play, although I don't feel I'm getting any better, but I'm just maintaining whatever muscle work has to be maintained. And I think it's also helping me get through these. I don't know how you do it, but I get through these times by performing to myself all these pieces and doing exercises. But when it comes to liturgy, you know, I was asked to rewrite music to old prayers, which we've known, Jewish prayers, which we've known all our lives. And it's interesting. At first, I wasn't even going to do that. And I let the email sit for a few months in the box. But then I looked it up after some 4 months. And I guess I was given an enlightening moment. And I started writing music. And nothing interfered with my writing in as far as old melodies coming in and suddenly forcing me to go somewhere which is familiar. Absolutely not. It was really interesting. It's been a really interesting process where I look at these melodies which I've known my father taught me and his father taught him generation upon generation, and they're also familiar in the Jewish world. And I've rewritten all these melodies to create perhaps like a concert, which of course it is Jewish and it's what we celebrate. But since it's liturgy, it could be that it's actually universal, because prayers have always been universal. Some of the greatest classical music was written as prayers, and it gets celebrated by the philharmonics and operas and choirs. It's magnificent, you know? And so I'm still in new waters. So I'm not sure that I've got the full stroke right, but I'm keeping my head above water, and hopefully it's not gonna put me in a position where I don't understand why I got into it in the first place. But it seems very, very healing in a sense, in a world that I feel that everything has stopped and has ended for me. And I'm of course watching the news, and I'm searching for new ways to communicate with my audience and with communities and all that. But indulging in writing new music has certainly been one of the best ways to get through these months, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that what you're doing is, it corresponds to my way of answering the question when people speak and they say, how are we going to get out of this? And we have to say, well, what is this and what do we want to get out of? I think that the essential reality is that besides COVID and besides the problems that beset us that are structural in society, and they are grave, that on a person-to-person level, that the one thing we have to do if we're going to have any of these solutions that stick are what we have to do is reestablish a sense of our own vulnerability and compassion and empathy, because that has been so skewered by a culture that has affirmed really blind alleys of cultural pursuit of money, of unearned fame, of material wealth, of, you know, and the idea of competition and winning, and the me-ness, M-E-ness, is as opposed to the us-ness. Mm-hmm. And what is it that, what are the acts that reaffirm in our hearts, which we must do, the usness? It is, when I hear you play that, it's like number one, it opens my heart, and it moves me, and all of a sudden I'm living in a real way about something that you've created, and it feels like you're saying when you play, I love you, you know, and that every moment where we say, this is an act of love, or this is an act of love, is a way to rebuild what has been threatened and injured so greatly. And that's why I think that you're creating that music, and also the idea of you're doing a new language of the liturgy of these could be such an act of, as you say, and the comparison between the writing of the sacred music, you know, over the ages is absolutely apt. So
yeah,
I love that.
Well, I'll tell you something. As you're speaking, and I'm trying to see the value of music in a society, in a social way, in a intercultural thing. So last week, I had the incredible opportunity of meeting down in Israel. I was in Israel for 3 weeks. And last week, I actually dedicated to performing. And I went down to the desert to what's called King Solomon's Mines, the ancient mines of King Solomon. And there, it was a very, very selective audience, which was all invited, maybe 50 people. But actually, it was aired in Israel, and it was aired in the Emirates, and it was aired in Saudi Arabia and in Bahrain, and Sky News and CNN, all that. But the beauty was that we met together. I was performing with an orchestra that's called Jerusalem East West. And that's a mixture of musicians who are Jewish and Arab and play, or Jews who came out of North Africa and play in the traditional North African way. We also call it Andalusi music, Al-Andalus, which is actually part of the music that was curated and developed during the golden ages of Spain before the Inquisition. So this is our old traditions meeting with new. And the concept that we gave is a combination of my music, which is mostly Western music, almost all of it. I'm a Western kind of musician coming out of Israel, though, but mixed with Arab music and North African music, the arrangements. And it was just a beautiful, it was a great meeting that we hadn't done in many, many months. I've given many concerts with this orchestra, but we haven't seen each other for a good 10 months, if not more. But what I'm coming to say is that when you play music, you cannot play out of harmony, and you cannot drum out of rhythm. It all has to lock in. It has to lock in. There's a yin and the yang in every note and every tone. And that's the key. And the reason why music is such a beautiful tool for putting people together of all walks of life, all opinions, all cultures, enemies and foes and friends and together, is because you cannot sing two voices unless they're in harmony and in time. That's a commitment. It's not even a spoken commitment. It's a given, right? I'm right? Peter, Paul, and Mary. The beauty of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Absolutely.
Those harmonies. So you took simple folk songs and created If I Had a Hammer, okay? Wow. Yeah, that was nice. It was great when, you know, Woody Guthrie or Pete Seeger sang it, Pete Seeger mostly, and suddenly you sang it in harmony, blowing in the wind. That harmony made those songs. First of all, that harmony brought more people together because that harmony resonates with everyone. Harmony resonates in general. I mean, these solo performers are amazing, you know, but when you have harmony, there's nothing grander than that, especially if it's a trio or quartet singing in harmony, like the Beatles were with harmonies. So Peter, Paul, and Mary always come back to me. So that is such an effective and evident tool and way of expressing oneself, and at the same time conquering the dreams, bringing the dreams to reality. The dream that you have, that I have, that so many of our friends have, that I think every born child has, to live in peace. Now, how do you define peace? Well, how do you define love? You know, there's 8 billion people in the world. 4 billion are going to be married to other 4 billion. They're going to find love. Love is a definition so generalized that everybody has to invent their own. And peace is that one of those equations. And the way to bring those together that we can do, you and I and our fellow friends, the musicians, is actually to encourage people to be together and to play music. One of my recent projects, which I've dedicated a lot of time towards in the last 2 years, was to create a guitar that was good enough and affordable enough so I can produce thousands and thousands of guitars and give them to underprivileged kids around the world. In the United States, I've joined in with, I've provided guitars to two organizations, which are in 3,300 schools in this country, in 43 states, called Little Kids Rock from New York and Guitars in the Classroom from San Diego. And they actually dedicate themselves to teaching underprivileged kids in very, very difficult situations. They give them instruments. I give guitars. So you walk into a classroom with 24 kids and we provide 24 guitars. These are Spanish guitars, very much like my guitar. Here, I have one. I have one actually here. It's a guitar that we designed with a heart. I did it instead of a regular hole. And it's the same size as mine, but fit. I did it especially so it would be right for a fourth grader to put his hands around. And it has really great sound, and it's sturdy. It doesn't break easy, which a lot of cheap guitars do. It's a fantastic guitar. And we've also, we're actually introducing this program also in Israel and in the Middle East. Right now we're in, you know, about a dozen schools, and every classroom gets, every child in fourth and fifth grade get a guitar into their hands. And the reason I'm doing this and I'm wishing for this to succeed is not only because the effect that the guitar had on my life, I'm sure it had on your life, I know it has, is because it's such a simple way of transposing or changing a young person's ability to connect with himself and to be a better person around, you know, around other people. And it's a point of connection. And these kids, when they commit to these instruments, whether it's in the United States or right now in Israel, if they commit for 2 years, they get to keep these guitars forever for the rest of their lives. So that becomes their companion. And that becomes a life changer. They don't have to become musicians. Many of them won't. But they'll be great engineers. They'll be great shopkeepers. And they'll be great lawyers, whatever they are. And so this is like the next step, as far as I'm concerned, in getting music into the hands of people who otherwise would probably be left behind in society. Because, you know, the comfort zone, a person is comfortable with himself, he can make peace with another person. If he's having a hard time with himself, he looks down on himself, can't find a way to express himself, he might even be dangerous to himself or to those around him. I mean, there's so many things that one can do to help to improve one's lives, but I can only do it through guitar. And so my contribution, little contribution as it be, is this particular project. And that has really kept me very busy. And now that I did an instrumental album, I can actually, I guess, expose the depth that an instrument has, even if you don't sing, you know, if you just play. I'm only in the beginning of this journey, mind you. I never considered myself a guitarist. I'm always an accompanist of my own songs, an intricate way of playing, but never thought of myself as somebody who could play without singing or telling a story. And this
I have to tell you a story that is coincident with this. There's an entity called One Story at a Time that emerged about a year and a half ago after something that happened to me. And it goes right into a situation where a guitar is at the center of it exactly the way you're talking about it.
Wow.
I went down to a place called Casa Migrante in Tijuana, which is a men's shelter, perhaps the oldest one, created in 1994 by a priest, and it serves the most needy, the most challenged of those who seek asylum and safety. And I went there to sing for them, and because I, you know, that's what you do, you know.
Yeah.
Yo-Yo Ma went to the border and he sang, and I went and I sang Somos el Barco and If I Had Hammer, and I sang, and I told them that we loved them and that Americans do love them and that we wish them well and all those things. And at the end of it, somebody was there that was really moved by it, and she couldn't stay away. She went the next day back from Tecate, which was where we were in this health spa that's helped me to retain my youth, youthfulness in even in this era, and out of that grew this organization. Now, interestingly enough, a person who has come on the board recently is Linda Ronstadt, and she has gone to Mexico and played because she also has this feeling about music and kids learning it, and she teaches it, and she's taught it, and she gave her a guitar like hers, one of those handmade, museum guitars, but to a girl. And there's a film that was just made in which this girl sits there and plays Greensleeves.
Oh, wow.
On the guitar. It's a nylon guitar. And then she talks about it, because what they are dealing with is they've run away from circumstances where their family members have been killed, where their cartels that have pursued them, where they are desperate. And of course, they came to the border of the United States, and they were looking for a solace. They were looking for asylum, which is internationally guaranteed. And alas, they were not given a chance. But she, when she plays this guitar, I'm going to show you that piece. If I could, I would show it now to everybody who's watching. It's the essence of, you see that she says, when I play, I'm okay, I'm safe. And it's a beautiful thing. So
that is, yeah. You know, I'll just end this a little bit.
Yeah.
My ultimate dream now is you've met my friend Saeed, who's from East Jerusalem, this prominent musician, Saeed Moran, amazing musician, and a good friend. So he runs this beautiful studio where I did the album East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem, and hence the film. And I think that place is the most comfortable place for Israeli musicians and Palestinian musicians to meet and actually to experiment together. It's accessible for Palestinians from across the border, from the Palestinian Authority to come, and not to feel that they're treading on turf that is, exclusively Israeli. It's right now it's a area which is East Jerusalem, and we want to turn that into an internet, like an Israeli and a Palestinian Israeli music center. So officially, we would upgrade the studio, and everybody would want to record there. Everybody would meet under that pretext, under the roof, and create all these amazing associations, collaborations, and bring a new sound, a new tone to life. Not sound, a new tone, a new way of looking. Because when you work together, and Israelis and Palestinians don't meet enough together, certainly not in the arts, there's no meeting place. So it's essential for us to be able to create an area where we can communicate with each other, and not through politics, through what we do is the music. This is my ultimate, goal in these times of I don't know how to even call them, because even in Israel, the political uncertainty is just as rough as here. Here it's not uncertain. There's a new president has been elected, and in January things will kick into a new reality, at least for a little bit. So this is as far as the scope of what I'm trying to, we need to raise money for these sort of things, just like I do with the guitars, the 1 million guitar project. But that's the side kick of it. I don't think it's the essential part. Funding it is important, but finding the right partners with which to work on all these projects, if it's the guitar project, if it's the creating the center around the studio project, and giving a solid place where these dreams can actually become reality.
I have sent the link to see your film, East Jerusalem, West Jerusalem. When you did this, which I think is not a hypothetical description of, but it is the actualization of how music can create peace. I've sent this to so many people because I think, thinking about post-COVID times, that what you have done here is going to be something that has to become a tool throughout you know, Israel, the United States, and the world, whereby the arts allow people to have not find resolution about their differences in terms of political perspectives, but find just a way to humanize. And just as you, I said, you were loving when you were playing the guitar.
Yeah.
To love each other.
These 8 days and eight nights in the studio were just a taste, a glimpse of something that is much bigger. I mean, you know, my work in the studio in East Jerusalem and my collaborating with my good friends, the Palestinian musicians, on music is something that's been ongoing for, you know, for decades now. So it's not something just for the sake of showing that music works. It works for me. It works for my colleagues, for my partners, for my friends. So it works. That's
sure.
It. And that's also what happens when you and I sing. You know, my new show, as a matter of fact, I have on December 23rd, I do my 25th anniversary of what I call the David Broza Not Exactly Christmas Show. And on that show, I have different cultures playing with me. I have these Cuban musicians, amazing Cuban musicians who, you know, escaped from Cuba.
Oh, and yes.
Here, and they really play their music. And we turn my music into more of a mix, of a fusion of Broza goes meets Cuba. You know, them, and I have my good friend musicians, you know, jazz musicians like Jay Bekenstein of Spira Gyra and Julio Fernandez of Spira Gyra and Frankie Centeno, special guests who are coming to perform. That they can check out that. That's going to be streamed across America, as a matter of fact, on December 23rd. Unfortunately, I can't even have you on as a guest because we're COVID restricted. But that show will go on. It'll be a live performance. Anyway, why don't you play us a song, Peter?
No. What I want to do is what I did with Noel Paul Stuckey the other day. And I want to do this with you. But I want to do it with a song that we've done from time to time. I know that you will have forgotten the lyrics because...
I always do, yeah.
Yes, but I want to do the song that is emblematic of what we've been talking about. It's Don't Laugh at Me.
Oh.
And it was written by Steve Seskin and Alan Shamblin, and it's an anthem of an educational initiative that you and I worked together to bring to Israel. We also, with Amal Merkis and with the U.S. Embassy that was funding it, and we started with four schools, two in Petah Tikva and two in Lod, which is a very challenged area, but two Palestinian schools, two Israeli schools, and it's now been adopted, this program, which uses music and also the tools of social and emotional learning, which means experiential educational methodologies that allow kids to express their feelings, to find how to resolve conflict, to feel the value of being there, to close and supportive with others. So this song is the anthem of it, and we did it in Israel, in Hebrew, and in English,
and in Arabic.
I want you to bring your guitar up. It's in D if you forget, and I'm going to say one line, then I'm going to tass it. And you say the other one, the next one, in English or in Hebrew. And people are going to love this because we're going to love it. All right.
The project that you brought to Israel and also I think now to the Palestinian Authority is called Operation Respect. The people should know that it's in tens of thousands of schools in this land, in America, and in many other countries. So... Big bravo for you and for Peter, Paul, and Mary for really funding it at first and starting it off, and now it's got, you know, the destiny of itself. And it's
it's in 70% of the schools. We started with four. Okay, here I'm going to do the first line, here we go. I'm a little boy with glasses, the one they call a geek. A little girl who never smiles, 'cause I got braces on my teeth. And I know how it feels to cry myself to sleep.
You continue playing.
אני הילד שקוראים לו חנון, הכל בגלל המשקפיים. אני פוחדת לחייך בגלל הגשר בשיניים. וכך אני נרדם כל לילה עם דמעות בעיניים.
Don't laugh at me, don't call me names, don't get your pleasure from my pain in God's eyes.
In God's eyes, we're all the same, so
someday we'll all have perfect wings.
Don't laugh at me.
I am the beggar on the corner you passed me on the street. I wouldn't be out here begging if I had enough to eat. And don't think I don't notice,
don't think I don't notice,
that our eyes never meet. And you sing, don't laugh at me, don't call me. Oh, in Hebrew we're going to sing.
Al tilagu li af pa'am ואל תחאיבו לעולם. הרי כולנו בני אדם ואף אחד אינו מושלם. אל תלעגו.
Well, I'm the fat, I'm thin, I'm short and I'm tall, I'm deaf, I'm blind, hey, aren't we all? I'm black, I'm white, and I am brown. I'm Jewish, I'm Christian, I'm Muslim, I'm Buddhist. I was born in Sarajevo, I was born in Kosovo, I was born in Northern Ireland, in Africa. I'm Hutu, I'm Tutsi, I'm gay, I'm lesbian. I am American Indian, born in Iraq, Afghanistan, Sudan, United States of America. I'm very young, I'm aged, I'm very wealthy, and I'm very, very poor. And now you do something on the guitar in this quick key. Don't get your pleasure.
Don't get your pleasure from my pain.
In God's eyes.
In God's eyes.
We're all the same.
We're all the same.
Someday.
Someday.
We'll all have perfect wings.
Don't laugh at me. Oh my God.
This is called transcending the COVID divide.
Confusing the enemy.
That's right. But that's, you see, there's something, there's a little bit of a struggle here. Life, you know, you say, well, life, it's, you know, you hear the term, life is struggle. Because if everything's determined for you, the beauty of life and the sense of your empowerment is taken away from you.
Right.
If you have to create these moments, you are in a compact with however you describe it, to be the higher power or God or gods or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're doing here. And we're doing it in love in the time of COVID.
Exactly. Nothing can take that away from us.
That's right. So I think that we're thinking about post post-COVID, where we're going. It's going to be about education, and it's going to be about intimacy and loving each other. And a tool for doing this is epitomized in the work that you're doing. And when we said we were going to do this program together, it ran through my mind that this is the time to kind of say, don't just talk about it, you know, experience it.
Yeah, let's do that one.
Line.
Right.
How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail?
How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand?
Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned?
The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Let me take the next one. Kama shanim nitzarech od lamud lifnei shenilmad ech lichyot vekama namshich lechakot lashalom im zayit v'shnei charavot.
Peter. And how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing. And how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? How many ears must one man have?
And how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry?
How many deaths will it take till he knows?
How many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died?
The answer, my friend.
The answer, my friend.
Is blowing in the wind. Is blowing in the wind.
The answer, blowing.
And now the guitar in the key of C. David, play us something on the guitar in the key of C. Magical. It's as good in a certain way. You know, if we had just had a little glass of wine together.
Oh, yeah.
While we were doing this, I'd say, I hung out with David.
I hung out with you. Know?
it is turning a sow's ear into, or it is weaving the sunshine out of the falling rain. Take that falling rain and turn it into the sunshine.
I agree. Beautiful. Yeah. I feel great now. Thank you.
Me too. I love it.